take a step back and make a running start into today. So I was thinking about the fact that Joseph, we had seen him as a 17-year-old boy, and he was kind of naive at that age and maybe a little dumb because, you know, he talked about these people bowing to him when he knew they already kind of had a problem with them. And but he went from this favored guy who was just totally loved by his father to this slave, hated by his brothers, sold into slavery by these people who are supposed to be his flesh and blood. And he had gone from this accused guy to this prisoner in Potiphar's house. And yet, as we learned last week, our sovereign God sustained him with his steadfast love and favor. So was it a dream that Joseph had that just turned to a nightmare? Or was it truly a promise from God of what was going to come from this dream? And I think that we're going to see that Joseph trusted God and trusted his promises, and so he chose to wait on him. And so today we're actually going to go back to some of the verses that we looked at last week, picking up at Genesis chapter 39, verse 21. And as we look at this, we're going to see how truly God is at work, and we can learn some lessons in waiting. So the first point I want to take you to is God is at work. Look for evidence of his work in your life as you wait for him. God is at work. Look for evidence of his work in your life as you wait for him. So verses 21 through 23 say this: "But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. The keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed." It starts out with the word "but." But what? But even though Joseph was falsely accused and thrown into prison, which, by the way, little side note, there was no trial here. It wasn't like innocent till proven guilty. There was no trial, and actually, it was very rare for somebody accused of sexual abuse to be thrown into prison. Normally, they would just be killed. So my thought is, did Potiphar really believe that Joseph did it? Or was he trying to protect his wife, who probably had a little bit of a history of doing these things? We don't have anything from Scripture that says it, so this is just thoughts according to Jonna. But the Lord, either way, was with Joseph, and that's the hope. When God is with us, even in the rough circumstances, we can have peace and strength. It's repeated twice in just two verses, verse 21 and 23, "But the Lord was with Joseph." And then it says that he showed him steadfast love. Steadfast love in the midst of our circumstances, because God is not depending on our circumstances to prove whether or not he loves us. Our circumstances do not prove God's love for us. So do we see this in Joseph's life? We see that it says that God gave him favor with the prison keeper. So what would that have looked like from an outsider's point of view? Somebody just watching him. Well, we see that Joseph was a man of integrity. So when Potiphar's wife came after him, he said no, and he even fled and took whatever he was going to have to take in order to do that. He was a hard worker. He was put in charge. He probably had some really strong leadership skills, even at the age of 17. And we're going to see that he loved and respected God. That would affect his attitude and his behavior in the way that he was going to treat other people. We're going to see that when we get into the next part, that he didn't behave with bitterness, which is so hard to do, right? When you're in the midst of a struggle, to not respond with bitterness. But he didn't behave that way. And the keeper of the prison most likely didn't put him in charge like as soon as he got there. He didn't, you know, just like, "You know what? You look like a leader to me. I think I'll put you in charge." Joseph probably had to prove that over a period of time. So he was in that situation for a while, proving that with Joseph, or with the way he acted. And then, as his character was proven to the keeper of the prison, then he was put in charge. And so from an outsider looking it in, you might not see God in that at all. But even if Joseph had done all those things, if God hadn't been in charge, it wouldn't have mattered. He would not have been put in the position that he was in. God was in charge, and God did give him favor. God was at work, and he is always at work. He is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And so the prison keeper entrusted everything to Joseph, and he didn't worry. And so we see this reason again and again, that the Lord was with Joseph. The Lord made all of his work succeed. So the question is, did Joseph still have to work? Yes. It says whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed. So it wasn't that he just sat around and did nothing. The Lord made it succeed as he did it. But did God do the work? Yes. It was together. God says the Lord made it succeed. So it's not this God helps those who help themselves mentality, as some people think, which actually is not in the Bible, as some people would want to say it is. And it's also not this let go and let God, where I do absolutely nothing. And just whatever God does, it is what Jerry Bridges calls dependent responsibility. We have a dependent responsibility. I am responsible to walk in obedience with the Lord. And I depend on God to give me the strength to do it. I have dependent responsibility. God takes my offering of whatever it is, and he blesses me in it. And notice something. We're talking about lessons in waiting. And so we have to ask the question, is Joseph doing nothing? Waiting does not mean do nothing. It sounds like maybe you would, but Joseph was waiting for God to deliver him. But in the midst of his waiting, he continued to be faithful to whatever God called him to do. So even in the midst of our troubles, God is at work. So we have to ask the question, what kept him going? What was it that Joseph saw that made him keep waiting on God and being faithful in the midst of it? Was he remembering back to his dream and saying, well, God promised me this dream, so I'm going to keep going no matter what. I'm going to trust that he's going to fulfill it. Was he just holding on to what he had been taught about who God is and what he had seen from his dad and from other people in his life? Or were there promises from God that he was holding on to? Or was it just a combination of all of these? And so my question to you is, what do you hold on to? When you're in the midst of these difficult situations and you can't see an end in sight, just like he couldn't see an end in sight. Is it the Lord? Do you trust that he's faithful, that he shows favor, that he shows you steadfast love, and that he gives you grace, and that he never abandons you, even in the midst of the troubles? Or is it something else? Do you hold on to yourself? Do you hold to the truth of, I can just do it myself and I'll be strong? Or do you put all your weight in another person, kind of making that person your savior who is gonna fail you? Or is it something that you look to, like, this is my escape? What do you hold on to when you can't see an end in sight? And do you know that God is the only one of any of those that has the power to get you through it? Relying on anything other than him is wasted energy, and it will always result in frustration and regret and bitterness. It will never result in peace, and it never gets you out any faster, which I think is something that we think, that if I can just take control of this situation, it will get me out faster. I will see the end, and I can fix it, and it never does. It just kind of gets us into more problems when we try to do it in our own strength. So what did Joseph do, and what does God want us to do? Look for the evidence. Look for what God is doing. Psalm 105, verse 5 says, remember the wondrous works that he has done, his miracles and the judgments he uttered. I just think it's so interesting that my faith, I don't know if you have this, where you have amnesia, your faith has amnesia. And so, like, even though God was faithful in this one thing, then I come up to the next thing and I totally forget that God's going to be faithful or that he was. And so he calls us in Psalm 105 to remember. Remember the wondrous works that he's done, his miracles and the judgments he uttered. So about 8 years ago, I was in a group of women that we would, we were actually praying for this building. We were getting together to pray over what God was going to do in building this church and the actual building. And just off the cuff one day, I said to the group of women, you know, I think it'd be so cool to have a blessing book. And I'm like the worst journaler ever. I will have like intentions to start journaling, and then I'll, you know, I start writing all this stuff, and then it's like it takes so long, and so then I just kind of give up. But I thought a blessing book I could do, because you might only write one sentence, like, God bless me in this way today. And even with that, I wasn't the best at the time. But what happened was, one of the women in that group thought it was a really cool idea. And so she showed up at my house, I think 2 days later, with this really pretty blue leather-bound journal. And she said, "This is your blessing book." And she did not know how important that book was going to be. First thing I wrote in there was that she showed up at my house with this blessing book, because even though I said it, I probably wasn't going to go get it. And so she showed up. So I started writing down, like, blessings from the past of, like, how we ended up in full-time ministry. I mean, 17 years of engineering, and then we end up in full-time ministry, totally a God thing. How we ended up at this church, which is a whole cool story in itself. And so I just started writing down stuff from the past. And then I started writing down the things that were going to be coming up and blessings along the way. So about a year and a half to 2 years later, it was February 7th, my husband's birthday, and we got a call that he had this tumor in his brain. And I don't know why I'm crying. I've told this story many times. But we got this call, and we didn't know what it meant. We knew he had no energy. Like, we would walk, we would go to take a walk, and he kept saying, "You got to slow down. You got to slow down." I'm like, what is wrong with this man? He's not that old. And then he would, you know, just say, "I think I have to stop." And we would get, like, two houses down, and he'd have to go back home and even sit down and rest before we'd go back home. And I was like, this man needs to get some exercise. I was not a compassionate wife on that. And then we find out that it's because he has this tumor that's ruining all of his hormones. And he's going blind, and he's, you know, got all these things. And I didn't know what it meant. I didn't know what it was going to be. And so the first thing I did is I cried out to God, and I said, "Lord, I need to know that you're good. I just need to know that you're good, that you're here, that you'll show me us your steadfast love and favor," right? And God brought me back to my blessing book. And I started reading the things that he had done, the faithfulness over the last couple years, and then even from before, of memories that I had written down of his faithfulness. And it got me through. Like, I had the strength to face what was coming, because when it's your husband or someone you love, you know, they're not alone in that. You're suffering with them, and you feel so helpless. And so God gave me the strength to walk through, and that's why I believe it is so important for us to look for the evidence of God's faithfulness in our circumstances. Do you see that God has blessings for you, that he is here with you? He is the same yesterday, today, and forever, as it says in Hebrews 13:8. And who he was with Joseph is who he is with you. And so we move on to our next point. As we go on to Genesis chapter 40, God is at work. Let his truth, not your circumstances, dictate your behavior and attitude as you wait on him. Let his truth and not your circumstances dictate your behavior and attitude as you wait on him. Genesis chapter 40 starts with the words, "Sometime after this." Sometime. So how long did Joseph have to wait? Sometime. Now, we don't know how long he was at from one point to another, but we do know that from the point he was thrown into that cistern by his brothers to the point that he ended up in second in command in Egypt was about 13 years. So sometime in that 13 years, this cupbearer and this baker commit an offense against their lord, the king of Egypt, little L Lord, that the king of Egypt, they commit this offense. And it doesn't say that they were accused. It says they did it. They committed an offense, which is not wise, because he has a lot of power and he could have you killed. And again, there's no trial, no set time, no promise of being set free, and probably they're waiting to see if they're going to be executed. So Pharaoh threw them in prison with Joseph. So is this a coincidence? I don't think so. So the captain of the guard appointed Joseph to be with them. Do we know who the captain of the guard is? It's Potiphar. He's mentioned in Genesis 37, 36, and 39, 1 as being the captain of the guard. So there was this some time, and then they get thrown into prison to be with Joseph. I think, again, did Potiphar know that Joseph was a good guy? I think he did. So they were there for some time, and some time after Joseph was thrown into prison. So this is a lot of some time going by. I think the reason why it's repeated twice is because we're being told this is a long time. And so then sometime after they've been in prison, they have a dream. Now, it's not the same dream as each other. It's custom tailored to them, and it freaks them out. So they don't know what it means. And so it says Joseph could tell that they were troubled. So they were probably going crazy with the what ifs. What if this means? What in the world does this mean? And so my question is, do you ever get caught up into the what ifs? What if this means? What if? What is God going to do? And it affects you everywhere, right? It's not like just your mind gets affected and you're like, you know, what if I die today? You don't think that. And like, what if? It's all of a sudden, it's like, oh my goodness. My mind is just reeling on this. It affects me physically. It affects me emotionally. It affects my relationships with other people. And so we have this thing where they're like freaking out. They probably feel sick to their stomachs and have all that churning and all that stuff going on. And so they weren't looking so good when Joseph comes to see them. And he could tell. So he's asking them about it. He's like, hey, guys, what's going on? And they said, well, we've had these dreams, and there's no one to interpret it. And they're probably not like, you know, we're just pontificating, and we've had these little dreams. They're like, Joseph, we've had these dreams. We don't know what it means. And so we see that God is at work here. This is evidence of his work. It is no coincidence that the interpreter of dreams gets put in with these guys, and he's going to tell them about their dreams. And Joseph's answer is, do not interpretations belong to God? Please tell them to me. Is God involved in Joseph's life? Absolutely yes. He didn't say, let me just talk. He said, do not interpretations belong to God? Does Joseph recognize God's love and favor in his life? Absolutely. He aligns himself with God in a pagan land. These guys don't believe in God. They probably don't even know what he's talking about when he says this. That doesn't change Joseph's resolve to stay true to God and to let truth dictate his behavior. So they tell Joseph their dreams. First, the chief cupbearer speaks and he says, okay, so there's this vine with three branches, and as soon as it buds, it blossoms, springs up, and then we have grapes. And I take the grapes to the Pharaoh and I give them to him. And Joseph says, good news. In 3 days, you're going to get your job back. Pharaoh's going to take you back. And then he says to him, only remember me and please tell Pharaoh about me so that I can be set free. I was stolen out of the land of the Hebrews, and I have done nothing wrong that they should put me into the pit. Favor or no favor, Joseph did not want to stay there. We have an intrinsic desire for freedom, and it is God-given, and it is not wrong that we want to be free. Even Jesus says that he came to set us free. And he says, you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. So it's not wrong to want that freedom, but we do have to wait for God's timing. So do you ever feel that pull of like, oh, I don't like God's timing. I just want to control God. And you have like gritted teeth and like, I just make you do what I want you to do. And it doesn't work. It's always done in God's timing. And it's always done his way, and does that mean that he doesn't care? Isn't that the first thing we think, is that he doesn't care? But no, he does care. God is even at work when we can't see what he's doing. I mentioned this building that we had prayed for, and this building, like Tim and I talked about this land that was here for like a year and a half before they even considered buying this property. So that was a long time of waiting. It was just the two of us, so nobody else really cares. But even once they bought the building, they leveled the ground, as you kind of have to when you're going to put stuff there. But then for months, it seemed like nothing was being done. It seemed like when you drive by, it looked the same month by month by month. But what was happening was they were digging holes, and they were putting down all the pipes for electricity and for the plumbing and the sewage, which is very important. And so they were doing all that work. And if that stuff hadn't been done, this building would not be in good condition. You would not be sitting here, because if you have to go to the bathroom, you have to go outside, we'd be sitting in the dark, we'd all have our phones out with the little light. I mean, it would just be awful. So all of this work had to be done before you could actually see the results. That doesn't mean that God's not at work. God is working even when we can't see what he's doing. So let's go back to the story. So we have the good news. The cupbearer is going to be released. And so the chief baker's like, all right, I like that. Now you tell me about my dream. There were three cakes in my... He's probably a little bit happier than the cupbearer was when he started to tell his dream. And he says, there were three cakes in my basket on my head. The top basket had yummy treats for Pharaoh. But the birds were eating it out of the basket on my head. His head was mentioned twice, and this is for Joseph. He knew this is like, uh-oh. So not such a good interpretation for him. In 3 days, Pharaoh is going to lift your head and have you hanged, and the birds will eat your flesh. Gross. So that was not exactly what he was hoping to hear. But Joseph's responsibility was to be true to God, even when the truth was going to be bad news. He had a responsibility. He said, I'm going to speak truth. And I doubt that he was like, oh, yeah, you're going to die. I mean, I'm sure he was compassionate, but he still had to tell him the truth spoken in love. So how did they live out those next 3 days? We don't know. But they're probably asking, like, is this guy right? Could it be that he doesn't know what he's talking about? Could the baker have said to him at some point, Joseph, I want to know this God of yours. He is so powerful that he knows my dreams, and we have no evidence that that happened. We don't know that they believed him. We don't know that they were going to turn to his God. We have no evidence, but we do know that what Joseph said came to be true because the one who is all-powerful spoke it, and it was. And he was still disregarded. So did it happen like Joseph said? Joseph would not have known anything if God hadn't revealed it to him. But yes, 3 days later, it was Pharaoh's birthday. He lifted the head of the cupbearer back to his position, and he lifted the head of the baker to a rope on a tree. That's just hard. So what if Joseph had let his circumstances trouble him the way the chief bearer and the baker and the cupbearer had been troubled? What if he let his troubles refuse him to be obedient to God because he was too upset about his geography? Was there ever a time that he wanted to shake a fist at God and say, where are you? And even in his situation, we know that he didn't blame God. He knew that God had the power to stop it, but he didn't blame him. Because when he asked the cupbearer to remember him, he didn't say, God hates me, God's done this to me, he's so mean. He said, they threw me into prison, and I was innocent, I didn't do anything wrong. But he remained faithful to God. So what did Joseph have to believe about God in order to draw near to him, even though he knew he was unjustly thrown into prison? Paul in the New Testament said, we walk by faith and not by sight. Did Joseph do that? In order to wait on God and stay faithful regardless of his circumstances, in action and attitude, Joseph had to trust God. My professor of a class that I'm taking for biblical counseling wrote a book, and he said in his book, his name is Bob Kellerman, as bad as our trials are, the worst is our trial of faith. What was Joseph's trial of faith? As bad as our trials are, the worst is our trials of faith. So where was his faith? Did he muscle it and just try to pull himself up by the bootstraps and tell him to buck up and take it? Or did he turn to God even in his despair? Psalm 62:8 says, trust in the Lord at all times, O people. Pour out your heart before him. He is a refuge for us. Did Joseph do this? Can we find any evidence to show us that Joseph trusted God and poured his heart out to him? And I think the answer is yes. He was honest with the cupbearer about his innocence, but he didn't blame God. If he was not pouring his heart out to God, who knows what kind of thoughts would have been running through his mind about God. When he offered to interpret the dream, he said, interpretations belong to God. And later, at the end of the story, we're going to hear him say, what you meant for evil, God meant for good. So you don't get to that conclusion without leaning on him as your Savior. And we see clear evidence that Joseph did trust God. I don't think you can trust God without communicating with him. And that means that he had to pour his heart out to God. In pouring out his heart to God, he was able to see that God is in control of the situation. And he was trusting that he would eventually understand God's wisdom, that God knew exactly what he was doing, and that God did care. And because of that, Joseph knew that God truly was his refuge, as it says in Psalm 62:8. So did Joseph know that God not only takes on our sin, but he also takes on our suffering? We know that with Jesus, we know from Colossians 3 that it says that he took on our suffering and nailed it, or our sin, and nailed it to the cross. But did he believe, and do we believe, that God actually takes on our suffering as well? So Isaiah 63:9 says that God is afflicted in all our affliction. God is afflicted in all our affliction. He takes our suffering on him. I have a friend who, a couple months ago, we were talking, and she said that her son had tried out for the basketball team, and she was actually concerned because she really didn't want him to get on the team. She was concerned not because basketball is bad or evil, but because she just knew where his heart was and that it was going to be a hard thing for his heart if he was on the team. It was something that she was afraid that would draw him away from the Lord. And so, but she didn't stop him from trying out. She was letting him do that. But then later that night, he found out that day that he did not get on the team. And she texted me, I think it was from her bathroom, sobbing, because she saw the look on her face, on her son's face, when he found out that he didn't get on the team. And she saw that he just kind of was taking it. And she was so brokenhearted. Even though she knew it was what was best for him, it still broke her heart to see him suffer. And I think that that's who God is. I think that there is no coincidence that God calls himself our Father and made us parents so that we could see that kind of fierce love that we have for our kids is the same, but even greater, of what he has for us. So while Joseph is grieving in prison, God is not saying, well, just deal, buck up. He's saying, I'm right here with you, Joseph. I'm hurting. So how would this situation have been seen through God's eyes? He's looking at Joseph and he's saying, I love you, Joseph. I'm here. I'm not abandoning you. Just wait. I have a plan. As Isaiah 41:13 says, I, the Lord your God, hold your right hand. It is I who say to you, fear not. I am the one who helps you. I'm with you in this. Just wait. I've got a plan. And here it comes. Get ready. Okay, now it's time for the servants to come. Why did I let you have that fiasco with Potiphar? Because he's the captain of the guard. And he was the one who was going to have to put these guys with you. It's all part of my plan, Joseph. Don't worry. Okay, ready? Cue the dreams. Got the dreams going. I will accomplish my purpose. I'm going to use the gifts I've given you, Joseph, to accomplish my purpose in my timing. And there's the rub. We're okay with God's purpose. We're not okay with his timing. His purpose, his timing. Do I negate everything that God says about himself because I don't like his timing? What do I have to believe about God in order to trust his purpose, his timing? There are five things I would say I have to believe about God, and there's probably a lot more, but I'm coming up with five. The first thing I have to believe about God is that he's in control. Ephesians 1:11 says he works everything according to the counsel of his will. I have to believe that he's in control. The second thing I have to believe is he's not a tyrant, but he's a comforter. God is not a tyrant. He's a comforter. 2 Corinthians 1, 3-4 says, "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our affliction." He is in control. He is not a tyrant. The third thing I have to believe is that he knows and wants what's best for me. Isaiah 48, 17 and 18 talk about, he says, "I will lead you in the way you should go, and I will teach you what's best for you." And then he says, "Oh, that you had paid attention to my commandments. Then your peace would have been like a river and your righteousness like the waves of the sea." God wants to give you peace and righteousness, and he wants you to follow you. Follow him. He wants to show you what's best. I have to believe that he knows and wants what's best for me. The fourth thing I have to believe is that he loves me. Romans 8, 35 through 39 is an awesome passage that talks about how he loves us, that nothing can separate us from his love, that neither death nor life nor things present nor things to come nor angels or rulers or powers or height or depth or anything else in all creation, and no tribulation, no distress. You think Joseph was in distress? No tribulation or distress, no persecution. He was totally persecuted. No famine, no nakedness, no danger, no sword. None of these things can separate us from God's love. I have to believe that he loves me. And lastly, I have to believe that he won't abandon me. Psalm 94, 14 says, "For the Lord will not forsake his people. He will not abandon his heritage." So I have to believe that he's in control. I have to believe that he's not a tyrant, but my comforter. I have to believe that he knows and wants what's best for me, that he loves me, and that he won't abandon me. And I believe that Joseph believed that. Do you believe that? Joseph was going to find that he was going to be tested to see if he truly believed that. And I think, how many times are we tested in our circumstances of what we truly believe about God? Verse 23 says, "Yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him." Hold on, Joseph. It's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. He didn't remember. The chief cupbearer promised, and he didn't remember. He forgot. But God did not forget. God was still with him. Isaiah 49, 15 and 16, God is speaking, and he says, "Can a woman forget her nursing child, that she should have no compassion on the son of her womb? Even these may forget, yet I will not forget you. Behold, I have engraved you on the palms of my hands. Your walls, that which needs to be strengthened and built up, are continually before me." So, Lord, what do I do now? Wait. Trust. Joseph, I'm still with you. My daughter, I'm still with you. And that takes us to our last point. God is at work. Trust him in your waiting and give him the glory when you see him move. God is at work. Trust him in your waiting and give him the glory when you see him move. Genesis 41 starts out with the words, after 2 years, after 2 whole years. Can you imagine how many times did Joseph hear footsteps and think, this is it. They're coming for me. I'm getting out. How long did it take for his heart to stop racing every time he heard footsteps? After 2 whole years, what kept Joseph going? Could it be that God spoke the words of Isaiah 40, verses 27 to 31 to him over and over and over again? Joseph, I see you. Your way is not hidden from me. I'm not disregarding you. I understand how hard it is. I will give you the power when you feel faint. I will give you more and more strength when this feels too heavy to bear. I am the everlasting God. I am your creator. Wait on me. You will soar like an eagle. God's purpose, God's timing. Wait on me, Joseph. 2 years later, Pharaoh had 2 dreams. 7 fat cows, attractive and plump, get eaten by 7 ugly, thin cows. Pharaoh wakes up. He's like, what the heck? And he goes back to sleep. And then he has this next dream. 7 ears of grain, plump and good, growing on one stalk, get swallowed by 7 ears of grain, thin and blighted from the east wind. He woke up and his spirit was troubled. I would think. He was kind of having a panic attack. What does this mean? No one can interpret his dream. Sound familiar? God is in control. Then the chief cupbearer, you know, the guy who's like with Pharaoh all the time, has to give him his drinks and make sure they're not poisoned. He's with them and he says, oops, I should have told you, this guy in prison, this Hebrew, like he interpreted my dream. And so could it be that purposely he had forgotten to tell Pharaoh because he didn't want to have to deal with it? And how do you approach him and say these things? Could it be that he never intended to speak to Joseph's name until the moment when it could make him look good in Pharaoh's eyes? And it really doesn't matter what his reason was, because God had a purpose, and not even a pagan guy who had no faith in him would stop fulfilling his plan. The cupbearer says to Pharaoh, so everything this guy said came to pass. So how do I know that he was a pagan guy? Because he didn't say, because this guy's God revealed the truth to him and then it came true. He said, what he said came to pass. And God was like, okay, fine. I'm still going to do what I'm going to do. So Pharaoh calls for Joseph. And so we go, like, think about it. Like, if it's a movie, it's like all of a sudden the music starts to swell. Maybe a little bit of a, like, low drum, low pad going. And he starts to feel this music. And so they say, Joseph, the Pharaoh wants to see you. And they get him cleaned up and shaved. So it's kind of interesting, little side note. All the beards that you see in pictures of Pharaoh and all the people from Egypt, they're all fake. They didn't like hair. So Joseph had to have himself shaved. So I don't know. That's just weird, I think. Okay, so anyway, he goes back. Pharaoh says, Joseph, I want you to interpret my dream. Was Joseph still close to God after these 2 years? Waiting for him, waiting for someone to come for him? Did Joseph experience victory in the trial of his faith? I think so. And this is why, because he looks at Pharaoh and he says, I can't interpret your dream. That is humility. He was saying, I know that God is the one who can, but I can't. And he knows God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble. Joseph had been humbled before God and said, I can't interpret your dream, but God will give you a favorable answer. Oh, Lord, please let it be a favorable answer. And in the original Hebrew, Joseph says, God will give an answer of shalom, peace. God will give an answer of shalom. How did Joseph know that it would bring Pharaoh peace? Wishful thinking, God let him in on it. The interesting thing is, when we hear the interpretation, the only way there is going to be peace is if Pharaoh believes that what Joseph said is true from the hand of God. So we know that Pharaoh's kind of freaked out, so he's going to tell him his dream. And so he restates the dream, and he shows him that he's freaking out, because when he restates it, he says it with a little bit more anxiety than what is said at the beginning. He says that yes, there were seven ugly cows, and they were not just ugly, but now they're ugly and thin, and they were poor and very ugly and thin. Sorry, the dream had said they were ugly and thin, and now he says they were poor and very ugly and thin, such as I had never seen in all the land of Egypt. I just want to say, I don't think I'd want Pharaoh to describe me. Just say it. Okay, so he says, and no one would have known that the ugly cows had eaten the fat cows. They were still ugly. Again, Pharaoh, please don't describe me. Then the 7 ears of grain were now not just thin and blighted, they were withered, thin, and blighted. This man is scared. He is the ruler and leader of all of Egypt, and he does not know what this means, but he knows that it's not good. And so how cool that Joseph was able to answer him with shalom, peace. This servant prisoner is now put on a level playing field with the guy in charge of all of what he thinks is the world, because of what the Lord is doing, and he is able to offer him peace because God had a plan. Joseph interprets the dreams by God. He says, the dreams are one. 7 years of plenty, 7 years of famine. How do I know by God? Because in verse 25, he says to him, God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. And then in verse 28, God has shown to Pharaoh what he is about to do. And verse 32, the fact that he gave you two dreams, Pharaoh, means that it is fixed by God. And then again in verse 32, God will shortly bring it about. God is in charge. Do not think for a second, Pharaoh, that you, being the leader of all this land, have power over God. He is in charge. He is going to do what he says he's going to do. He has a plan. And then Joseph explains to Pharaoh all that he needs to do to prepare and survive the carrying out of his dream. How did Joseph know what to do? You see, he had been in training for 13 years. He had been put over Pharaoh's house in training, learning how to run things, and then he had been put over the prison learning how to run things. He knew how to ration food. He knew to do all kinds of things, and so the constant presence and favor of God was with him all along the way. He was in training, and God has the same for you and for me. Like Joseph, we need to trust God's timing and his purpose, waiting on him and giving him the glory. God entrusted this plan to Joseph because Joseph trusted God. So I want to take a passage of scripture and apply it to the situation. It's Proverbs chapter 3, verses 5 through 8, and it says this: trust in the Lord with all your heart, and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths. Be not wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. It will be healing to your flesh and refreshment to your bones. So we're going to take a little bit of a little thing up here where we're going to look at, what is this saying to do? What is it saying not to do? And what are the benefits of doing it? So first we have do. Trust God with all your heart. So do trust God with all your heart, and then don't lean on your own understanding. And you can see that we have to trust in the Lord, not to lean on our understanding, and then that's going to give us a benefit of this, that he will make your path straight. Even when they seem crooked to us, God can make our path straight. And then it says, do acknowledge God in all your ways. Sorry, I went a little bit out of order. So do trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do acknowledge him in all your ways. Don't lean on your own understanding, and then he will make your path straight. Don't be wise in your own eyes. It's really interesting. Proverbs 28:26 says, whoever is wise in his own mind is a fool. I mean, that is just painful, because I don't know about you, but I've been wise in my eyes many, many times. Do fear the Lord, which really means worship him. I loved how Mitch said it a while ago. He said that the fear of the Lord is where we stand back in awe and look at him, and we step forward in surrender. Do fear the Lord, and do turn away from evil, and then we have the benefits that it will be healing to your flesh and refreshment to your bones. We see Joseph here in this list. Joseph trusted God even when it didn't make sense. He acknowledged God. He definitely feared God in worship. He turned away from evil. How do we see that? He turned away from sexual immorality with Potiphar's wife. He turned away from bitterness. Can you imagine the bitterness that could have grown in him? He turned away from resentment and from anxiety. Notice that though it said that the cupbearer and the baker were troubled and Pharaoh was troubled, it does not speak of Joseph being troubled. He didn't lean on his own understanding, and we're going to see that more and more as it continues to unfold. He got wisdom from God. He didn't try to be wise in his own eyes. Was God faithful to make his promise, to make his path straight, to keep his promise of that? Yes. We're going to see that as this story continues to unfold. God healed and refreshed him even when his circumstances were hard. When we have that sense of not trusting God, how often do we just want peace? And it takes over our whole body. And we feel like it's not just our mind that's affected, it's our whole body that's affected. But God offers us peace by trusting in him. Notice when it said, do not be wise in your own eyes, turn or fear the Lord and turn away from evil. That was all part of one phrase or one verse. To be wise in your own eyes necessarily means that you are turning toward evil. We think, oh, I just have a little problem with control. No, we are turning toward evil. And what do we lose when we do that? We will not have straight paths, because God is not saying, well, fine, you're going to go that way, then I'm just taking it away. It's because he says, I love you too much to let you think that going down that path is going to satisfy, because in the end, it is not good for you. And I love you too much to let you go there. And it says that he wants you to have healing and refreshment. If you're not having that sense of knowing, you don't have to know. He didn't know what was going to happen 13 years from now. He just knew what the next step was. If you can trust God with the next step, he will make that path straight for you. And if you can trust him, that you will have that healing and that refreshment. This is what God wants to offer. What would Joseph have missed if he focused all of his attention on complaining to God rather than being trusting in God? What if he had decided to be wise in his own eyes rather than trust God's wisdom? He probably would have done a lot of complaining, and he would not have survived, because there's no way he would have had the kind of devotion to God and the attitude that you need to walk with God in that complaint mode. As Christy said last week, Joseph was a potato and not an egg. So that when the water was boiling around him, he was softened to God and not hardened like an egg. What did he gain by not settling there in his mind with complaining and trying to be wise in his own eyes? He gained, in the midst of prison, refreshment and healing and a straight path. What will you gain if in the midst of whatever you're going through, you turn from a sense of not trusting in God and a desire to just complain about the situation? Because when we don't trust God, let's be honest, that's what we're going to do. We're going to complain, and we're going to try to take control, and we're going to blame others. But when we turn to God in trust, the thankfulness that comes. What evidence do you see of God in your life where you are dependently responsible for where you are? Where you are recognizing your responsibility before God, but depending on Him to give you the strength to walk through it. As you wait on Him and trust that He really is at work, you can let His truth be what motivates your attitudes and actions rather than your feelings. And believe me, I understand that thing when those feelings, they just have so much power. But God is greater, and He will give you the strength if you let Him. As you see Him at work, you can give Him all the glory because He is faithful. Because He has a plan, His purpose, His timing, which will be what's best for you. He is at work, and He will not abandon you, and He loves you. And so as we close this time in prayer, I just want to ask you, what burden is it that you need to hand over to the Lord? Let's not just take this information and leave it in our head, but let's let it get to our hearts. To hand over the burden to Him and let Him take it from you even now. God is with you in the suffering. He doesn't have to be kept at bay. He wants to share it with you. What do you need to hand over to Him? And as we go to pray, I would just ask you to go ahead and hand that to Him now. And just know you're going to have to hand it to Him again and again. And again, because we have a really good ability of picking it back up.